You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Are you a culture guy?
What does that mean?
Do you believe in culture?
Like,
you know, like an organization.
Like Culture Map?
I believe in Culture Map.
You have to. You should.
Absolutely believe in Culture Map.
Best way to find out what's going on.
Absolutely.
Hip trends. All those different things.
It's on my it's on my favorites bar.
Okay.
It's on my show. Why do I call it? Show folder as well. It has like 50 different tabs. It always takes forever to load in the morning. But I'm talking about culture in regards to sports. You know, every coach says, oh, culture's big to us. Culture, we have to have culture to win. The reason they win is because of their culture.
You were a fan of Culture Club, weren't you?
I don't know what that is.
No Boy idea George, right?
Boy George, yeah.
Sorry.
You were a Karma Karma Chameleon or whatever.
I remember that song.
Okay.
That song's not mean.
Do You Really Want to Hurt Me? Was one of your favorites?
Let's see where this is going.
Carry on.
Sounds like tons of fun we're having.
Carry on.
But to me, how do you feel about that? Culture. Culture in a sports organization, in a franchise, in a program, whatever the case may be. How important is that culture?
I think that here's the easiest way I can explain it, Jeremy. In if you're winning, right, or if you have high expectations, it means more, right? I think that when you talk about team that are championship caliber, look at the Browns right now, right? What's going on with the culture of their locker room from Baker Mayfield talking about other players' money to now OBJ and his dad basically forcing their way out? You got a culture problem, right? And it's bad because you got a team that's arguably one of the top three most talented teams in the conference. And that's when it really becomes vitally important. I think a lot of people look past a lot of culture issues when you're at the rock bottom or you're at the bottom of the totem pole trying to work your way up because they're like, you know what? At a given time, when we're really starting to make progress from a talent perspective, we'll worry more about culture.
Now, I'm a big culture guy, too. I believe culture is important to have in an organization. I think it's bigger in the college game. Big culture guy. It's hard to see whenever a team's not playing well, right? Like, you have the Texans at 1-7. They're preaching culture. It's easy to mock that. It's easy to make fun of that. I believe it's a bigger deal in college than I think it is in the professional game. Like, if you have a good locker room, you have some good veterans, they can build that culture. To me, another big reason why it's hard to have that in the NFL is because there's such high turnover in the NFL. There's such high turnover in professional sports that you might have a great culture in 2021, then a couple of your key leaders that might not even be some of your best players, they leave in free agency, you bring in a couple of guys to replace them, they don't have that same character. I think it's difficult to have that culture. I would also say this. Like, I don't think having great personalities or good people in the locker room or great culture in the locker room always translate to victories either. Like, to me, it's what pushes you over the top. If you have good culture with a very good roster, now you become perhaps a great team. So it's very difficult to really see what a culture can be in an organization, especially whenever one is bad. And the fact that you have Nick Caserio talking about it left and right, David Culley talking about it left and right, it's tough to quantify and define. Nick Caserio yesterday gave it his best try.
I would just say, I think it's probably important to kind of put this out here a little bit. I don't know if I've ever really stated it or said it, but again, what are we trying to build here in terms of our program? And I think everybody kind of gets caught up in culture. Like, what does that exactly mean? I think there's a lot of different definitions or how that's interpreted. Culture is about habits and about action. Okay, it's about work. That's what culture is about. So it's being able to build up a series of habits, a series of actions, put those in place that you have something sustainable for a long period of time. And that's what we're trying to do. And there's a lot of work that goes into it. Okay. It's not going to happen all at once. It's going to take a lot of purposeful effort, purposeful work.
There you go. The three words there, the three pillars of the Texans culture: habits, actions, and work.
Okay. Well, I mean, you know what? Easier said than done, too, because that's the thing. I mean,
the only habit I see is losing right now.
Can I ask you a question? How does Brandon Cooks fit into all those three things and making sure that that happens either on a more consistent basis or better for the franchise going forward?
He said he was a leader. He said he was a leader of this team. He said he's one of those guys that makes everybody else accountable.
Can I follow with another question, Jeremy?
No, you can't.
If that's your kind of leader, would your leader run to Twitter and say that you're basically what your organization just did was BS?
No, he wouldn't.
I didn't think so. I think that he is, again, the used car salesman that we alluded to, and he is trying to sell you a 76 Mustang with low miles that looks like the car of your dreams that you have to have for that perfect summer in Houston.
He can cut a promo. There's no doubt about that. How about the head coach, David Culley? He insists the Texans are building the right culture. Despite losing all of these games, here's Culley on the value of winning when it comes to building culture.
When you're establishing a culture, winning is important. You know, winning is important in a culture. And, you know, basically we're taking it one game at a time right now. And basically when we get that first win and that next win, then we just keep moving from there.
We already got one of those.
Yeah, they're looking for their next one. They're searching for their next. It's important to build the culture, right, of the organization. See, I don't think winning's actually that important to build the culture. I think buy-in is where you get, or is what you get from winning. Like, in terms of building the culture, a lot of times you lose games early on because you're building the culture. Like, who's that Texas wide receiver, Jordan Moore? They got into an argument today with Sarkisian, and they're wondering if Jordan Moore's ever going to play again in the or Joshua Moore. Joshua Moore got into an argument with Steve Sarkisian during practice on Wednesday. Like, this is Sarkisian in year one. Sarkisian right now is probably trying to do what Nick Caserio and David Culley are doing, right? He's probably trying to build a culture at Texas, try to build a toughness that he doesn't think that they've had before. Joshua Moore is one of their best players. But you know what builds culture? Setting the example to a player who's arguing with you. A culture builder for Steve Sarkisian, he should kick Joshua Moore off the team. That doesn't help the winning, though, does it? It actually gives you a less chance of being able to win.
I will say this, though. It does send a message to the rest of the team in the fact that there are certain things we're going to tolerate and certain things we're not. Because that's more than culture. I think that's structure. That's the dynamics of how you run a program, and whether it be professionally or especially in college, because kids who feel like they're going to be surefire NFL prospects, they come in with a totally different mindset, mentality, attitude than kids that are just happy to be there with a scholarship, trying to be the best football player they can be for a university. And I think that's where you have to see there's a distinct difference. You got to send a message not only to the kid who did it, but to anybody's thinking about doing it in the future.
But that's what I'm talking about in the sense that it doesn't always translate into winning. Building a culture doesn't always translate into the winning, and sometimes it actually has an adverse effect on winning, and you're willing to sacrifice that early in a program to establish that culture. So I'm disagreeing here on how important winning is to building a culture. And in fact, it's actually kind of siding with the Texans because they're not playing very well. Here's one more on David Culley about the fact that this should be a competitive roster.
No, the players on the roster are good enough to do competitively what we need to do. We have not done a good enough job of, first of all, putting them in position consistently to do that and coaching it to do that. But yes, they are here on this football team.
All right. So there's David Culley. You ever see David Culley on the sidelines?
Yeah, you mean chewing his tongue and looking like he's ants in his pants? He's looking like Caserio at a press conference most times on the sidelines while he's trying to ask the side judge for if he wants to come over for dinner later.
I'm going to tell you about David Culley, who's a junkie.
He is a junkie, chewing on that tongue, no doubt about it. Zippia put together this list of 60 pet peeves that annoy people. Number two, loud chewing or drinking. David Culley's taken away number two right out of the gate. So he's on this list of the biggest pet peeves at the number two ranking of the 60-person list. What are some pet peeves of yours, Joel?
Off the top of my head, I don't know. I mean, I know I have plenty. I can't think of any right now. I see that somebody decided to give him some gum, though, so that he didn't chew on his tongue so much on the sideline. That was a good move, whoever did that. Now their PR department might want to talk to their general manager and coach before they talk to the media so that they can figure out what the company line is on certain issues, players and otherwise.
My pet peeves usually regard driving. I hate when people are in the right lane at a red light.
Oh.
and not turning right. Like, I understand it's not a right-only turn lane, but have a little courtesy. Have a little respect.
Me, especially growing up in the Midwest. Left lane, fast lane. Don't sit in the left lane going 52 miles an hour, okay? You know what? I'm not trying to get shot. I'm not trying to piss you off. But understand the rules of the game and be courteous. If you ain't here to drive over the speed limit, then get the hell out of the left lane.
No, I'm right there with you. Most of mine are in the car. Get out of the left lane if you're not going fast. Get out of the right lane if you're not turning right at a stoplight. Have a little respect for your fellow drivers out there. Look, I'm a gentleman, so I will let people cross. Like if you're at the grocery store, right? Like, hey, yeah, you can go. You go ahead, walk across. I'll wait here as you walk across. But whenever you get the go-ahead to go, go. Don't walk around like a turtle going across the street. You know what I mean? Like, you get the go-ahead to go, move at a little pace. Have a little bit of hustle. Let's go here.
I'll see that, and I'll raise you at the grocery store, in particular in the parking lot. Those with the cart, you want to be courteous and let them cross. But then instead of going to one side or the other so that you can still have plenty of room for clearance to go down that certain aisle to find a parking spot or get out, they take it right down the center and basically as if to taunt you and say, this is my road now, until this is my lane until I get out of it. And the same goes with a shopping cart in hand. If I'm stopping at the end of an aisle to let you cross, the last thing I want to do is later on in my excursion through the grocery store, have you going 80 with your cart and just decide, I'm going out in front of you and you'll wait.
Yeah. 713-780-3776. What are a few of your pet peeves? Mine usually have to do with time. Like, if you're wasting my time, that's whenever I get bothered. Because, like, my time I find to be very precious. And I feel like I'm respectful to other people's time, too. Like, I realize everybody's in a hurry. I realize time is money.
I got one that bothers me more than it bothers you.
Think of a couple here, Dale.
I got one that definitely bothers me more than it bothers you.
All right.
That is the people that feel like they're entitled to tell you on social media whatever they want, call you whatever names, question your, bring in your family members and otherwise with no repercussions, and it should be okay. However, if we respond representing more than just ourselves, we could suffer severe damages. The cowardly keyboard warrior has always been an issue with me.
Yeah, you're right. That does bother you more than it bothers me. I don't know why I can ignore it, but I'm just able to do it. A couple of texts, biggest pet peeve, 713-780-3776. Slowest drivers in the middle lane of a three-lane road. Yeah, I can see that one too. He said it creates more issues, obstruction than that same slow car moving to the far right. Yeah, if you're going to go slow, just get to the right lane. Nobody cares. Like, hey,
I agree.
If you want to drive 50 in a 60, that's your prerogative. I do not care. There's nothing wrong with that. But get in the right lane. Have a little bit of courtesy for others. 5554, speaking of shopping carts, I hate when they leave the carts in between cars or just push them on the grass. Yeah, yep. Walk 15 feet to put the cart inside the cart cage that it's in.
It's not that I think it's okay instead of putting it where all the other carts go, but at least if you pop the front wheels up and get it so that it doesn't move on that grassy knoll, it won't dent my car. If you leave them in your blocking spots and in between spots, that's when it's going to dent and scratch your car.
Right, but I also want to help out the guy that's the carts by putting it where it goes. I don't need him chasing around a bunch of carts. What about you, Dale? Do you have any pet peeves that just drive you up the wall?
You know, nothing gets me really angry that's in anyone's control, except for one I noticed, and I was like, huh, I didn't know that about myself. I was coming, and it happens quite a bit around here. I don't need you marking your territory like a dog with your cologne. If I can smell you when you're not in the elevator anymore, what are we doing here? Like, it happens here quite a bit. I mean, people, you will notice it. If I think it was Monday morning, I walk in and I see the guy walk by me. I'm like, okay, whatever. It's cologne. I can smell you. You're down the way. Maybe I just caught a whiff. I walk into the elevator and it's still there. I shouldn't have to smell your cologne 45 seconds to a minute after you're already out of the elevator. Who are you doing that for? I know you're not doing it for me. Who are you doing that for?
Yeah.
I didn't know that was in me, but it is. I thought it was always just a little spritz and a little walk around or maybe on the wrists and say, okay, we're good.
Yeah.
Why are you marking your territory with your cologne?
I'm a spray walk through type of guy. You know what I mean? Yeah, whenever I don't wear cologne often, to be honest with you. It's usually like a nice night. I'm in a suit, suited and booted. I smell fine all the time, except for that one day. There was one day I did.
There was more than one day, but you called yourself out one day.
There hasn't been more than one day.
You called yourself out one day.
That one day was bad, I'll be honest with you, but that was the only day. Yeah, whenever I put a little cologne on, I'll spray it in my bathroom, and then I'll walk through the mist that's left behind.
Yeah. Can't you just get a Mr. Cologne bottle so it just mists you, and while you're at your sink getting ready to leave, you just one spray, one... And you're done.
It is a mister, but I don't want that direct blow. I feel like that intoxicates my entire clothing with the smell, which I don't try to avoid.
Better than your armpits doing it.
Well, that's what deodorant's for. You don't use cologne.
Some people don't use deodorant, Del.
That's a problem.
Matthew McConaughey.
I just thought to myself, first of all, it's like 9 a.m. on a Monday morning. What are you doing this for? And look, we don't need to get into the demographics of everything, but certain cultures, cologne's different. We all understand. It happens. It's just
so is deodorant, Del, because I can also tell you that the flip side of what Jeremy's talking about that annoys me is, and Lisa and I talk about all this time, I'm like, oh my God, we were here or there, and they were in charge of watching our kids all day or whatever, and all I can smell is armpit, because not only are they against it, but if they've decided to pick up my child or whatever, and then somehow tuck the child under one arm and then give them back to us, and you go, whoo, man, now it's not just your problem, it's mine too.
Don is saying people on their speakerphones while shopping, that drives me crazy.
Oh, that's a
too.
Big one.
Yep. Todd says, my kids saying what after everything I say, even though they heard exactly what I said. That is a trend with kids. I thought of one too. It was off the top of my head.
I told you one that I've talked about on the air before. The guy that takes the cell phone into the stall in the bathroom and then has the conversation.
Oh, as they talk?
While you're in the bathroom. And then if you are the unfortunate one in the bathroom with that person, and I can tell you that it's happened here more than once. It used to happen at the Rockets, too, where you'd walk in there, and you're at the urinal, but they're in the stall, right? And you kind of think you're by yourself anyway. And all of a sudden you hear, hey, how you doing? And I'm like, wait a minute. First of all, I didn't know anybody was in here. Secondly, I hope to God you're not talking to me. And then you realize they're on their phone in the stall, and they're like, yeah, no, it's been a rough day today. Yeah, no, I'm in the car wash. Like hell you are. That's when I feel like going all over right next to him, like, you liar. And why the hell would you take your phone in the bathroom? And then on top of that, if you're a germaphobe, think about everything you're getting all over that phone while you're actually taking dropping a deuce with your phone while you're having a convo.
That's why Twitter was invented.
Oh.
That's why Twitter was invented. At least saying people who yawn and stretch unnecessarily loud. I'm guilty of that. 713-780-ESPN. What are your biggest pet peeves? 713-780-3776. Dusty Baker is back. What that means for the Houston Astros, especially in this critical offseason for James Click. That's next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
I don't blame you, Don.
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5, 713-780-ESPN. Pet peeves that you have. Got a bunch of text on this. People who let their kids run crazy at a restaurant. Tell your kid to sit there down and behave like everyone else. Go Blue Jay. That's a great one. My biggest pet peeve is someone knows that something bothers you and they use it against you. That one's a good one. It's deep, but it's a good one. The motorcyclist who drive between traffic.
Ooh, good one.
I can't stand that. I can't stand when you see someone parking in a handicapped spot and they're probably 25 years old with no disability or knowing with
good
them
one.
That it has a disability and get out and walk normal just as fine. Yeah, that one's a great one, too. I have no tolerance for that. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776.
Now, if you see it, would you say something about it?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, good.
Absolutely. I feel I'm big on justice. One proud moment I had recently, there was a long line for a parking shuttle at the airport. Like, it was a late flight. It's like midnight. Everybody's tired. They're waiting on some, you know, parking shuttle to take them to their car. And there's a line probably about 15, 20 people deep. This dude tried to walk to the front of the line. And I'm like, excuse me, sir. The line is back there. And luckily, he was kind of old and didn't look very strong. So I really wasn't intimidated at all, which probably helped. But I have no time for that. Like, come on. Have a little decency for the rest of humanity.
The other one that annoys me, and Lisa had to talk me off a ledge, is when you're in the pickup line to pick your kid up from school and someone does the same thing, they bow out into the lane of oncoming traffic because there's no one coming, and then they suddenly flip their signal on and they dive in like 30 cars up in the pickup line. It's the same way when you're on the highway and you're trying to exit and there's 15 to 20 cars and you're one of them, and that car takes it all the way until they almost can't get to the front any further, and then they just bogart their way in.
How about a merge lane?
That's what I mean. Well, yeah.
But I mean, like on the highway too. Like if you have two lanes that merge into one, the obvious thing you do is left lane, right lane, left lane, right lane, left lane, right lane. Red fish, blue fish. We know the story. Like the people that try to speed up and get two from the left lane, none in the right lane, that drives me crazy too. All right, let's go to Wes out on the HRNP listener line. Wes, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
All right, wonderful. So I was listening to what y'all were talking about, and y'all brought up the idea about driving slow in the middle lane, and I have to say I am guilty of it, and here's the reason why. I feel like I'm giving courtesy to the left lane, letting them do their speed, but I also feel like I'm giving courtesy to the right lane because it's an exit lane. And so it allows people to exit the highway doing whatever speed they want to go.
That's a pretty good point. I think that Wes maybe is pushing back a little bit at the earlier pet peeve from one of the texters. Appreciate that, Wes, and thanks for listening to the Killer Bees. That makes some sense there. You got the fast lane in the left. You got the exit lane in the right. Get in the middle and drive slow. I appreciate Wes admitting that and giving
as long
us
as you're not
the
left,
story.
That's my biggest deal.
Yeah, just, the left is the that's one right. that I have the most concern of. If it's a three-laner and you're going slow and you're thinking that right lane needs to pick up their speed to exit, all right, that's fine. Or even trying to get onto the highway, too. You want to stay out of that lane, keep it clear, because you have the merge 2-1. It kind of decongests traffic a little bit. That makes sense, Wes. I'm glad you said that. Later on tonight, Glenn Davis and Soccer Matters. A big show tonight. The Dynamo have a new GM, Pat Onstad, who was a former Dynamo. In fact, was here in the glory years. He was the goalkeeper for the back-to-back Houston Dynamo. So Pat Onstad will be on the show today. They'll be taking over a deep dive on the Dynamo roster, changes that need to be made in the offseason. A lot of Dynamo fans not happy with the direction of the organization. It's been brutal. And hopefully
they've
Pat
embraced
Onstad,
the suck for multiple years.
I don't know
years.
If they've embraced it. I mean, they've been forced to embrace it.
Oh, but that's what I mean.
Hopefully Pat Onstad can change that around. But he'll be on Glenn Davis Soccer Matters tonight, 7 to 9, right here on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Dell will be the first to tell you how much soccer matters.
I mean, I did 3 years of English radio of Houston Dynamo, so it's I was their voice, their radio voice last time that they were in the playoffs.
Your goal call.
Went to the Portland Timbers. I can't do it on the spot.
Why?
Because I have to see it. I got to be
emotion,
in the moment.
Man.
Yeah. Was there a lot
it's
of emotion in it? Were you
sure.
hanging on the Were you hanging on the goal?
Absolutely. Depending on the goal, I mean, I'm not going to like go nuts in a 3-0 match and we score our first goal like that. Like, that's.
But
like,
did you hang on
sense.
The word goal when it was scored?
It would depend on the goal. Like okay. I just let it go. I mean, I don't have like a call. It's all about emotion and feeling.
I'm glad in life you like to let it go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, David Nunez used to do sideline stuff, and I would be his spotter out there. So I was there when they were good, the Brian Ching years.
Yeah.
Remember those years at Robertson Stadium at the time?
My first year, they were good. They went to the Western Conference semis. They beat Portland, and they gave the double middle fingers to Mauro Manotas. But after that, they got pretty bad.
Portland's really good, and they've been good for a while.
And Dynamo went there and beat them. That's how cool
it was.
They
are passionate in Portland about their soccer.
Dusty Baker, it looks like he's coming back to the Houston Astros. This is something we talked about in great detail yesterday. I'm not a huge Dusty Baker guy. I don't think he's a great in-game manager. His strength is what he does in the clubhouse. Jose Altuve, glowing comments about him after the World Series. Carlos Correa, great comments about him after the World Series as well. Bob Nightingale saying that Dusty Baker will return. Here he was in the wheelhouse yesterday.
Jim Crane wants him back. Dusty wants to be back. Such a no-brainer. So I don't know if it's going to be a one-year contract, 1 year plus an option, or perhaps 2 years. 2 years may be a little funny in the sense that GM, you know, James Click is already signed through next year. So my guess is, you know, 1 year, maybe an option with it. You know, had a nice day.
Nightingale sounded like he was struggling a little bit getting that.
Sounded like Gilbert.
he was struggling a little bit to get that.
Some Gilbert
out.
Vibes right
he
there.
Might have been celebrating that Braves World Series in the city of Houston. A little bit too much there for Bob Nightingale. I like that the Astros are doing this right away. Look, the offseason starts now, mm-hmm. and this is a critical offseason for James Clegg, so get that taken care of. Focus on the roster, which the roster is far more important than a manager in baseball. I love to nitpick the day-in, day-out of what Dusty Baker and a manager do. The very best strategist in Major League Baseball and the very worst strategist in Major League Baseball, the gap there is really not that great. I think it's somewhere between 5 to 7 games from the very best strategist to the worst strategist. So, like, even I'm willing to admit that, even though I will nitpick it to death, and I will do that with Dusty Baker. Meanwhile, Buster Posey retiring. This is the story coming out. Buster Posey retiring from the Giants. Still pretty young. He's in his early 30s. You look at the numbers and the immediate conversation you have when a great player retiring. You look at the numbers, Posey, 302 average, 372 slug, 372 on base, 460 slug. As a rookie of the year to his name, an MVP to his name, 7-time All-Star appearances. I'm not a huge, like, this is going to surprise people, I'm not a huge numbers guy whenever I look to see who should qualify for the Hall of Fame. To me, it's more about, was that player great at his position for a lengthy period of time during the era? Because you can look at the steroid era, and you have guys like Larry Walker, like who is in the Hall of Fame. But you have guys who put up huge numbers, like Brady Anderson, Luis Garcia, Luis Gonzalez, Steve Finley. Like, those guys weren't the best players at their position. So to me, it's more about the number. It's about looking at what that player played, what position he played, and then stacking it up. Exactly. That's why I said steroid era. And then stacking it up to, you know, what their level of greatness was at their position during their period of time. If you look at Buster Posey's tenure in baseball, for the brunt of his tenure in baseball, he was one of the best catchers in the entire sport.
Best hitting catchers.
And more than the numbers, that's why he's a Hall of Famer for
one, one team titles, too, because that's what, you know, here's the thing. You're right, and I agree with you. And I wanted to make sure, because we don't want to get in trouble for making accusations or saying things that weren't true about players that might not have been proven. But they took vitamins. But from the standpoint of what you're talking about, the problem that I always have with all of these issues or discussions about Hall of Fames and MVPs and All-Stars, you got to know the criteria. Because without the criteria, then nothing else matters, and it's all just a matter of opinion from one person to the next and what you value as important, right? So some people say it's individual accolades and awards or silver sluggers and gold gloves and batting titles and you know, best hitting at your position. Others say it's all-stars and, you know, at the end of the year, accolades given to you by writers and the people that cover the sport on a daily basis. Others say, well, what have you done to make your team better? So that would mean how many division titles, playoff appearances, league championship series, and, of course, the end-all be-all, how many World Series did you win? It goes back and forth. But, again, it fluctuates from sport to sport by the way they do it. And I've had a real issue with the way the Basketball Hall of Fame worked and why it took so long for Guy V. Lewis to get in, when all I heard from people like Calvin Murphy, who were part of the selection committee, that actually bowed out and said they'd never be a part of it again, and they were so ticked off because it was more politics than it was about your resume and what you were able to do. From the NFL standpoint, they all get in a ballroom and someone that has to nominate the player, and then they have a massive discussion where anybody can take all the shots that they want about the player, while the one person that nominated him has to sit, stand up there and stand up for their wares and justify why they should get in. No, it should be pretty clear cut, and there should be direct criteria that relates to in or out. But there's no taking away Buster Posey. It's like, from the standpoint of, if he quits now and people say he still had something left in the tank, but that's his choice. Like Barry Sanders, it was his choice. Or Gale Sayers, it was their choice. Jim Brown. The fact of the matter is, were they an absolute bitch when they played to bring down, stop, or get in the way of, right? Jim Brown, no one could tackle that dude. Barry Sanders, in another way, not as physical, no one could tackle that dude. From the standpoint of Buster Posey, could you get him out?
Yeah.
You couldn't. Buster Posey had one hell of a career. In my opinion, he's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, to me, it's a yes or no. And it's a, were they dominant at their position during the period that they played? And for Buster Posey, I mean, he's always been one of the best catchers during his lifespan as a big leaguer. So for me, yes.
713. And a classy dude.
Absolutely, he is. And that helps, too, because the voters ride on this, or the writers vote on this.
It's a popularity contest. That's what I'm talking about. And that's a factor that will weigh in.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3777. Odell Beckham, is he worth the headache? That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Your home for sports. ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Now, Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Dr. Dre on Twitch saying, my pet peeve is having an owner that allows his stars to walk in free agency. Keuchel, Cole, Springer, and now Correa next. I get it. I wouldn't resign Correa, but I get it. Texter saying, when people don't have payment ready at the grocery store. That's a good one.
Uncle Drayton on Twitter with a great one. When you allow someone to change lanes or get in front of you in a tight spot, like, you know, merging on the highway, and they don't wave. Oh, I hate that.
That's a good one.
Oh, I hate that one. That's a fantastic one, Uncle Drayton.
You need to show a little bit of courtesy for the favor you were just given. That's a really good one. The really loud moms that laugh at restaurants. Go Cougs. Hmm. I have nothing bad to say about mothers. But I love my Cougs.
Or Cougars.
So I'm torn on this one.
Or U of H supporters.
That's what I was referring
to. Oh, I thought you meant the Cougars. Never mind.
Odell Beckham Jr.
Dell Cougars was more down your alley.
I mean, I have a different term for them, but we'll stick with
Let's stick with the ones that are FCC friendly, Dell.
Is that a fair reference there, Dell?
I mean, considering my soon to be departure, it's a bit that we do on the show.
I know that, but I was just wondering how fair it was.
It's not that fair. I mean, because the alleged woman in question wouldn't even be considered a cougar.
The alleged woman in question.
The alleged woman.
Not, you started out on the right note, and then you went to the alleged.
It is alleged.
Does she now not exist?
No, the woman exists. The alleged interactions between me and her are the alleged part of it.
All right.
Now, I do have an older neighbor.
But they were based on what came out of your mouth in terms of your personal description.
Yeah, because I play a role sometimes.
Well, you're into role play. Is that what you're saying?
Certainly, but as far as the radio show and the previous show I was on, I played a role, and sometimes you lean into stuff. That's all.
So, what's the word that you would use that's not cougar?
It wouldn't have been dirty. It starts with an M. It's MILF. That's what I would have said.
All right. So, segueing to Odell Beckham Jr.
Shouldn't ask. That's all.
Odell Beckham Jr. Told to stay home from practice for the second day in a row by Kevin Stefanski. Baker Mayfield got pretty open to some of the questions he was getting in regards to Odell Beckham. We know the story now, right? Odell Beckham Sr., OBS, posted a YouTube video of all of the times that his son, Odell Beckham Jr., was wide open and that Baker Mayfield missed him. Baker was peppered with questions about this topic, and here was what I thought was his best response to one of them.
Have you spoken to Odell since yesterday?
No.
What was your reaction to the video?
I was probably just about as surprised as all of you were.
Is the relationship salvageable?
I mean, I don't know. I thought we had a very open line of communication going into it, so we'll see. You know, like I said, more surprised than anything, as everybody was. So we'll see going forward. And there's always room for improvement in any relationship, so we'll see.
We'll see what happens in this. Obviously, that it's not a good situation right now. I would personally be shocked if Odell Beckham Jr. plays another down for the Cleveland Browns. The question now becomes, what does Cleveland do with him? Do they put him on waivers, or do they just fine him for conduct detrimental to the team, or they just give him the Deshaun Watson treatment where they tell him to stay away? That's what's going to come next in regards to this. Like, if I'm Cleveland, I'm thinking I'm a playoff team. Odell Beckham's contract's not great for the next 3 years. I'm waving him with the hope that somebody claims him and gets me off the hook.
Are you, if that team is the Baltimore Ravens or someone in your division?
See, I don't think he really upgrades Baltimore that much.
But nonetheless, you know what? Stranger things have happened. Look, Les Alexander never forgot the fact that the Rockets cut bait on Jeremy Lin and he became Lin Sanity with the Knicks. So that he had to bring him back thinking he was going to be able to get that same kind of mojo, and it never worked out. But you know what? It's happened time and time again when you make decisions. And I think that the one thing you don't want to do is make a decision and then have the team in your division capitalize by getting him, getting something out of him, and maybe that takes them to another level as opposed to you. Like you said, the Browns think they're a playoff team, but if it prevents you from getting further in the playoffs or making the playoffs because a team in your own division got one of your best players, you got nothing for them, and that's the other thing. If you don't get anything for them, it's one thing. If you don't get anything for him and then someone else picks him up, it does, then it's a completely another thing where you look really bad.
Well, the benefit of releasing him is the fact you don't have to deal with the headache known as Odell Beckham Jr. anymore. And then the hope is that somebody claims him off of waivers so it gets you off of the contract. I don't think anybody would claim him off of waivers, to be honest with you. It's a contract that people aren't going to want to have against the books for the next 2.5 years. Now, the interesting thing is Under the CBA, if Odell Beckham gets outright released and he clears waivers, now he's owed that money by Cleveland. And then under the CBA, he then can collect the balance of his salary from the new team that he signs with, essentially double dipping with Cleveland and then whatever team he goes to, if that is the case.
But that's what so many teams are hoping for, because you're right. The only team that has the cap space sitting there right now to make room, or one of the only teams that would be someone that he would probably consider, are the Ravens. Other than that, there are teams like Green Bay and the Rams that are chomping at the bit going, please clear waivers. Clear waivers and let him come in, because we would love to have him.
The Rams?
The Rams just cut DeSean Jackson. Yeah, they need someone else.
They're pretty good.
He has top a house in Los Angeles.
Their top three is pretty good.
Right, but you know what? He could win a Super Bowl, which he would love to do.
The distraction? You already feel like you have a Super Bowl team. Like, what if he's not going to get the ball ahead of Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp? Like, he's going to be the number three at best receiver. They have Van Jefferson, a kid who they like. I wouldn't bring in that toxic
for the rest
headache
of the year,
and Odell Beckham Jr.
Have a chance to win a ring. Cross that off your list as we talk about, at the end of your career, things that matter.
Does that matter for Odell Beckham? I mean, he's on a pretty good team right now, a team that people had as the dark horse in the AFC, and he's still complaining left and right.
He's got a guy that doesn't get him the football, and he obviously doesn't believe that guy's going to take you to the promised land. He can get in Green Bay, be the opposite receiver to Devontae Adams, for sure.
He could get it. See, that's why I don't think L.A. makes sense, but some other teams do. Green Bay makes sense to me.
He's got a house in L.A., though, so therefore, you know, finding a place to stay and all those other things to take care of, and he has a chance for just the rest of the season. He's not signing long-term, but just for the rest of the season, he may have the best opportunity to win a Super Bowl.
I just think he wants the ball so much. How about New Orleans? I mean, he's an LSU kid.
Michael Thomas out for the year. Another great call.
Yeah, he's out for the year.
But guess who's throwing you the football? If you had a problem with Baker Mayfield, you're probably going to have a problem with Taysom Hill and or Simeon.
Yeah, we'll see what happens to the situation. It wouldn't surprise me if Cleveland just keeps him on the roster and tells him to go home and gives him the Deshaun Watson treatment, just for the fact that he doesn't play for another team. And also, you wouldn't be on the hook for the money if he does clear waivers and then it's just an outright release. We'll have to see what happens. But it is a situation worth monitoring. Meanwhile, the Henry Ruggs situation, terrible situation. I mean, twice the legal limit, killed a woman, killed a dog, was driving 156 miles per hour while intoxicated. His quarterback, Derek Carr, had some pretty deep thoughts about the situation yesterday.
Have you had a chance to talk to Henry yet?
No. Honestly, with what we were told, I just didn't know if we were able to. Haven't reached out. I will always be here for him. That won't change, and I'll prove that over the course of time to him, not to anybody else. But he needs people to love him right now. He's probably feeling a certain type of way about himself right now, and he needs to be loved. And if no one else will do it, I'll do it.
Nah, I thought that was pretty cool.
How do you not like that
David
guy?
Carr's brother?
You know, you might hate the Raiders for whatever reason. How do you not like that guy right there? Because this is just like with Gruden. He, you know what? And whether you're religious or not, or you buy in or believe that or not, it doesn't matter. That's a good dude. That's a dude that says, we all make mistakes. I'm going to see your shortcomings, but I'm not going to see him so much that I'm not willing to be there for you as a friend for who you've been to me. And he did it with Gruden, and he's now doing it with Ruggs. And he's right, because you know what the oddity of all of this was? Lisa and I were talking about this last night, and it finally dawned on me. Did you ever see the stories when he was at Alabama about the fact that his best friend was killed by a drunk driver? Yeah.
No, I didn't know that.
And that when he scored touchdowns, he literally made a hand gesture with his fingers to the sky for his friend who was taken way too soon. I think they were going to watch a state tournament game for one of their high school teams, and they decided at the last minute, he and a buddy, to get in a car and go, and his buddy was killed, and his buddy was an all-state basketball player.
That's terrible.
And now all of a sudden, this happens, and you're like, man, you would think this is the absolute last situation you'd want to be in. But for Carr to do that, amazing. And by the way, taking it back to our conversation previous to this, there's another team that would take Odell Beckham Jr.
Yeah, that's the one that I was thinking about, but I couldn't remember, because I remember there was three teams that I thought would be a good situation for Odell. David Carr, after these comments from Derek Carr, was tweeting about how Derek Carr should be an MVP for these comments, which is probably not quite the best tweets you should be having, and he deleted them. But you can make the case, David Carr, about David Carr's brother.
Oh,
but if Derek Carr wins the AFC West and he's a top three quarterback in the NFL, he's definitely on the short list of MVP.
Has to be,
because you survive a coach getting fired midseason. You survive this terrible situation. If the Raiders still win the AFC West, one of the top teams in the AFC, and he's right there in the mix of, like, you know, top three most passing touchdowns, top three most passing yards. I believe he actually is in the mix for the NFL MVP. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. These college football rankings getting openly mocked. Who said what? That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
713-780-3776. Texter saying that Henry Ruggs was not in the car when his friend got killed. I don't think you said that, though. You said
no.
You said it was kind of, I mean,
they were both going.
I could see how it was heard that way.
Yeah. Yeah. They were both on their way to a state tournament game of some sort.
They were not in the same car, but they were both going to the same place.
But it meant so much to him, the impact that it had on his losing his best friend, losing him that way, losing the, you know, what it meant to his family. He was always trying to do things to be there for that family that lost that child. And then to have this happen, it's just, it's even more tragic.
713-780-3776, people's pet peeves, people that eat with their mouth open or talk while eating.
That's big
a good one. People that don't chip in on the pizza, but eat eight slices.
Another good big one. Or, yeah, when you ever do to a group dinner, which I used to do all the time when me and my buddies would go out when we were all single, and you were the one not drinking, but then one of
split
the guys,
the tab.
And we all would split the tab instead of trying to nitpick who got what. But then you had the one guy that went, well, then I'm going to get the bottle of wine and I'm going to get this and that. And you're like, and you're only going to pay way less than you would have otherwise.
Mm-hmm. People don't put that in the equation when they should. When people buy down on silverware while eating their while they're eating, Aggie Joe. I don't think I've ever seen that happen, but I can imagine why that would be a pet peeve.
People do what?
Biting down on their silverware while they're eating.
Yeah, I don't know that I've experienced
I've never
that.
Experienced
I guess
that
if
either.
You like the slide noise it makes when it slides across your teeth, maybe it bothers
it's like
people.
Nails on the chalkboard for me just thinking about it. Daniel Tice will not be in action tonight for the Rockets. So if you're thinking about the Rockets in that spread, they need to cover 10 in Phoenix. They're 4-3 against the spread this year. Daniel Tice will not play with right great toe soreness, according to Bajani. Who tweeted this out? Right?
So
great
is it
toe soreness?
The soreness is great, or is it your great toe? Because Rezzy on Twitch clarified after Googling that the great toe would be another term for your big toe.
I mean, that would be my guess. I've just never heard it referred to as that.
I can understand that maybe in England, that seems like a kind of way that they, in their vernacular, the way they speak, that they kind of have different approaches
English.
To things like that. Yeah.
Yeah, so great toe. Daniel Tice not playing because of the great toe. This Dave Portnoy story, by the way, Stuhl Presidente. I haven't really been able to dive into it. I've just seen some tweets and stuff about it. But
the
is this
head
a Trevor
of Barstool,
Bauer type thing?
Yeah, the head of Barstool. There's now a story circulating on social media that he was evidently abusing females after lining up sexual encounters with young ladies.
Not good if
fair?
True.
Just,
not good if
that
true.
Is that fair to give you that synopsis? Am I missing something there? Can you tell me?
No, I think what I read from the tweets, that's pretty much the situation. We'll find out, I guess, more in greater detail later. But hopefully that, hopefully he wasn't acting like that and they're not true. I mean, we'll find out. I mean, if somebody's acting like that, then they need to face justice. Like Trevor Bauer. Anyways, college football rankings have been out for a couple of days now. Cincinnati's 6th. Mississippi State somehow is 17th despite being 5-3. And Oregon is in the top 4 despite losing to a 3-5 Stanford team this season. Stuart Mandel writes for The Athletic, joined the Wheelhouse yesterday, and talks about how the committee is holding Cincinnati to an impossible standard.
Stuart. If nothing else, I thought Gary Barta's comment specifically about Cincinnati and the fact that they hadn't looked that good the last couple weeks against Navy and Tulane was as telling as anything to me, because it basically said the only way we're going to take Cincinnati seriously is if they clobber every single team they play every single week. And that's just not realistic of anybody. Cincinnati's a good team. They didn't play great the past couple weeks. But because they don't have the schedule strength, the committee is holding them to kind of an impossible standard.
So there you go. Stuart Mandel saying Cincinnati's holding them to an impossible standard. I believe that, too. I think the fact that Houston and SMU not in the top 25, too, is the committee telling Cincinnati that no matter what you do the rest of the season, it's not going to be good enough for us. Meanwhile, over at Texas, we talked about this a little bit earlier. Joshua Moore got into it with Steve Sarkisian during Wednesday's practice. May not be part of the team anymore. This is year one of Sark. If I'm Sark, I'm not letting the dude that's getting into it with me at practice continue to be on this team. You need to make that statement in year one. Maybe it's different if it's year five, year six, but this is a first-year coach trying to build culture, that buzzword we like to hear. You're a team that's not going to win the Big 12. You're not going to be in the college football playoff. This is the time you set the example.
I couldn't agree more, but I the only where I disagree is whether it's year five or six, it's most vitally important in year one. Coming off of the Tom Herman experience, and how many, from Charlie Strong to Tom Herman, how many expectations have been just completely shattered with the last two coaching moves, but also because it is college and because you have to show who's boss, because you have to have control of your locker room and you have to have your players respect you and your coaching staff. That's all those things and more is why this is vitally important. And this is why you don't let this kid play again unless. Now, if you believe in second chances, then look, then you got some real work to do before you get back having a chance to play. I'm not going to close the door on you, but especially if I brought you in. But what you are going to do is you're going to apologize to me, the team, and you're going to show that you understand how we're going to do things here. Otherwise, there's the portal. Go apply right now to play somewhere else.
Texas has had to wear a little egg on their face here these last couple of days. You had the special teams coach, Jeff Banks, that had his girlfriend, Pole Assassin's monkey, bite a kid on trick-or-treat night on Halloween. Sarkisian was asked about it during his press conference. Sarkisian said the monkey story is not a distraction at all. He said that's a personal matter with his special team coach. Personal matter there. At,
I would say this. If there was ever a coach that was right in saying that way, probably Sark, based on the fact that his track record in the past ain't exactly clean either. So the best way he can do it for a guy that he hired and really doesn't want to be a distraction is to say, hey, you know what? I'm worried about what they do. But again, and I saw Texas fans losing their mind about culture again and about, you know, it's about off the field as well as on and all. And that's a legitimate point. But I mean, he hired the guy, so of course he's going to probably want to try and stick up for the guy. But at a certain point, you can't take it that kind of flippantly either, because a lot of coaches can be great coaches, but if they're off the field doing other things, it can be a really bad look for your program. So I'm sure whether he publicizes it or not, there had to be a pretty solid heart-to-heart one-on-one that happens or happened between Sark and his special team coach.
Yeah.
Get ready to ride on, baby. Let's go!
Slim's asking us on Twitch, if Bama wins out the rest of the season, but they lose to Georgia in a tightly contested SEC game, are they still top four? Do they still make the college football playoff?
I think based on what we've said, and Dell absolutely chime in, but I think that we're heading towards, unfortunately, but because of all the parity too, I think we're heading to two SEC teams.
It's going to be tough for a two-loss team, and here's why. Because they would be the four seed, and I don't think the committee would want to see a rematch that quickly. To me, that's the biggest reason why. Like, if you could slot them in number three, they could do it.
Stranger things have happened where the final seeds are.
Sure. What do you think about that, Dell?
That would be my one hesitation to saying it's definitely a possibility. That scenario where they wouldn't want to see the immediate rematch. But putting Alabama at two, suggesting that despite their loss, they're still the second-best team in the country with multiple Power 5 undefeateds in front of them, or at least on the landscape, says to everyone, like, hey, if Alabama plays Georgia to, like, 24-21, we still have every reason to believe Alabama's better than an Oklahoma or a Wake Forest or a Michigan State.
Or Cincinnati.
And, yeah, I was using Power 5, but because I almost exclude Cincinnati from this conversation. It's clear they don't want them in. But as far as Alabama getting in over the schools they would acknowledge as possibilities, just throw them at four, say, hey, Alabama's actually, with two losses, the third best team in the country. That close loss to Georgia doesn't mean they're any worse than we thought going into the game. We'll just put them at three, and let's go. And you know what we're going to do? I actually kind of hope for it because it's Armageddon. If that happens, it's college football Armageddon. There's no way you come back from doing that, and I hope they try to get over on us with that, because then forget about it.
Yeah, I like to root for chaos in my college football too as well. Mike Boynton, the head coach for Oklahoma State basketball, crushed the NCAA yesterday. The NCAA banned Oklahoma State from the NCAA tournament this year, and Boynton in this press conference just like crushed the NCAA. There was one single violation. A player received $300, not a recruit, not a future recruit, not a family member. One player received $300, a secondary violation. He said that on February 7th, that the basketball team was in Lawrence, Kansas for a game. The NCAA apparently had the appear hearing on that day. Boynton and the people in charge of Oklahoma State showed up. They cooperated with everything that the NCAA was asking of them. They provided all the information. They worked in partnership with the NCAA to, you know, find out their punishment, find out their penalty. And then whenever the NCAA gave them this one-year probation, can't make the postseason, Boynton just went scorched earth, like named names, like who they were talking to in the NCAA, just absolutely blasted them. And as somebody that's not a huge fan of the NCAA, I pretty much enjoyed what Mike Boynton did yesterday.
I'm not a fan of the NCAA either, and I believe that it is a pick and choose. Don't worry about past precedent and anything else. Just, you know, do as I say, not as I do, and we'll do whatever we want kind of mentality. They need more of that because they need to be held to the fire, and they need to be called out. And there obviously needs to be changes made across the board, because as we talked about from before we got to the NILs and all the other things that the NCAA has dealt with, they are a cash cow that believes that they can set all the rules and parameters and dictate everything, and it's got to change.
The problem with this is the people who run the NCAA were put in place by the institutions. So really, anyone who has any university or college who has a problem with the NCAA, look at yourself, because they are the people who run the NCAA are members of those institutions or were put in place or voted on by those institutions to give them power. It's the NCAA is much like a commissioner in a pro sport. They're given that power by their constituents, and yet, depending on the constituent, they'll screw over Oklahoma State. But you know what, LSU and Will Wade, keep your job. You know why? Because LSU said we're not going to agree and help you out on this. It's actually better to not go along with them, because you can fight them. You can extend. You can go to court. Kansas, what's happened to Kansas and Bill Self? Are they banned from postseason play after the things that came out about them?
You're right. I mean, it's better to not work with the NCAA than to work with them. And that Boynton said that in his press conference yesterday, too. He said, do not work with the NCAA. It's a good point by you, too, about how it's kind of like a Goodell situation where the NFL owners are hiring Goodell. It's kind of contradicting whenever an NFL owner then bashes Roger Goodell. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Nick Caserio lays out his plan. What's the mastermind? What's the master plan for the Texans? Nick Caserio tells you what it is next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.